And so one of the first things that we learn to do is to slow the thinking of the mind down. Slow it down. And there are various ways of doing it. And we will come to them eventually. But the best way of all is to shut the senses down. And then the mind cannot elaborate thoughts out of them. And that's good. And the moment that you can start to withdraw from your senses and have nothing to do with them, the mind gets a bit jerky at first, but eventually becomes slowed down, and the stream of thoughts alters. The stream of thoughts alters. Now, what I'm going to put up here has nothing to do with the electroencephalogram. The stream of thoughts, each one of these peaks is a thought. And then you can, all kinds of thoughts. And with that going on incessantly, the chances of the soul, the inner self, breaking through to you is extremely unlikely. Maybe you have an accident, maybe you have an anesthetic for something. But the chances, and add to that, sleeping like a hog, then there's no way of communicating with the higher self. But if the process of thinking is slowed down because of a curtailment of sensory input, then a space between thoughts occurs before the thinking starts again. And it's then that an opportunity for the higher self to intervene and inject something here which is spiritual, which has nothing to do with the mind, nothing to do with the emotions, nothing to do with the senses. It is spiritual. Now you may say, whew, I'm never going to manage that. That's not true. If you manage it, if you just try and try and try and try, it'll eventually come to you. And the moment that it comes to you, it increases all the time, and you will be able to set up a system. Never do anything spiritual without it having something, some application to help mankind. That's the best way to avoid going cuckoo. Make sure that your meditation isn't always up in the rafters. Make sure that the meditational factors enable you to be a better person in the world. Remember always truth, beauty, and goodness, the three principles of Plato. And so by creating the space there, and we speak of it symbolically as being between the eyebrows, the sacred square inch. By having that space there, we are able to reciprocate. It's like bringing all the typewriter keys into operation. You can learn to put things there yourself. Put things there yourself. And in the Claregate method, we call it propositioning the higher self, propositioning the inner self. Proposition with what? Put something there, and if it is worthy, and the inner self believes that it should be cultivated, it will be cultivated. It will sprout. And all sorts of wonderful concepts and ideas will begin to flow into you. They may not be the answers to an immediate question, but over a period of time, answers will emerge to anything that you put there. What can you expect there? Mundane images. You know, when the Christians say, well, when I die, I'm going to life eternal. You press them a little further and you say, life eternal. There must be a lot of things having to go on to spread out over life eternal. What sort of things will you expect in the heaven world? Can I suggest some to begin with? Then you suggest some. Hymns singing? Choruses of angels, lots of little cherubims. Things that have nothing to do with their ordinary lives, everyday lives, and which, for most people, mean absolutely nothing. And eternity with that? I had one last week. A friend that I hadn't seen for 40 years. And when we got down to this kind of subject, that was his observation. But the moment that you try and press into it and dig it out, what? I have my faith. So never think that everything is on this plane that is wrong with the universe. So you can proposition the higher self. In the Claregate method, we use a language much older than any language known on the planet. We use a key to the higher consciousness. It's called astrology. Astrology was used on this planet in Atlantis. It's probably the oldest science apart from medicine, known to man. And of course it is understood by the gods who practiced astrology in hundreds of different shapes of body that they incarnated in. Whether they were in Tibet, where there is Tibetan astrology, whether they were in China and using Chinese astrology or Egyptian astrology or whatever, it was a key. It need not be your key. You can use numbers if you get a good teacher on numerology. You can use any key you like. Be sure that it is old enough and acceptable enough to the gods. Frame what you have to say. How can you frame? In our astrology, you can use a thing as simple, almost any sentence that you have. My sick daughter, the moon, the ruler of the house, what can I do about my sick daughter? There's a direct question. And so you frame the aspect for it. For me, it would be moon and Leo in the sixth. Put it down in your diary. Spiritual diary on a clean page. And you can also put it there in the space between the brows. If you are a person that's unsure of yourself and you've been keeping a diary some time, you can put your aspect in there, and anything that then comes through, especially at the time when you're going off to sleep or coming out of sleep. Hypnagogia and hypnopompia, isn't it? Something like that. Very, very important periods when you're going off to sleep and when you're coming out of sleep. Things that occur at that time visually within you are important. They should go into the diary. And you will find that you have got permutations there, certainly, but there is enough there to give you guidance. And you've got it! Haven't gone to somebody else and sat down in a group and whatever you do, and it's come through somebody else. You've got it yourself. How else will you learn? How else if you don't learn to do it yourself? Occasionally, when you have developed some rapport with the inner self, you will get signals. How far do I go? There are several very sensitive areas in the body. Very, very, very sensitive areas in the body. One of them is above the roof of the mouth, near a little nerve plexus there. One of them is in the respiratory center of the medulla. And there are a few others. Now, in medicine, there's a syndrome called Cheyne-Stokes syndrome. And a certain kind of illness will make a person stop breathing. And when they stop breathing, the amount of carbon dioxide rises in the blood, in the body, and it makes the respiratory center sensitive, very, very sensitive. And this is followed by the person starting to breathe rapidly, Cheyne-Stokes. But we have in yoga a system of suspended breathing, where we learn to suspend the breath and the carbon dioxide increases. We have full consciousness, full awareness, and we can make this area sensitive. And if an answer, and it's always an affirmative, is required in the midst of your travail, your daily stress, then this center can be prepared, and the answer will come when your mind is not thinking. You're doing something, some chore like washing up, and suddenly you get this. It's a beautiful feeling. It's a beautiful feeling. It's like sucking in fresh air after being shut up in a cinema or something for ages and ages and ages, and suddenly you take a breath of fresh air and it does something to you. And it is a very obvious thing. I've had people say to me, well, you know, I've meditated for 25 years and I'm fed up. I bought all the damn books available, read them all twice, and I've got nowhere. And while I'm talking to them, usually in a consultation, they're... And here's the person says not getting any answers from the higher self. Now, I don't want to see you all walking around Piccadilly trying to get answers that way. I'm only here to show you options, possibilities. I'm telling you that the higher, the inner self, will do anything to try and reach you. But for most of mankind, that's the barrier. Now, that is why Madame Blavatsky said, the mind is the slayer of the real. The inner reality cannot get through to you, to your point in consciousness, because the mind is killing it. The lion is killing the unicorn. He can't pierce through to you. There are many things we share anyway with the inner self. I share my anatomical knowledge with the inner self and all those who work in my particular sphere. Don't all have to learn anatomy, but my anatomical knowledge can be called upon. But then there are others who have other kinds of knowledge and understanding, those who have a lot of will and can be called upon to exercise it if they have will raised. There are those who have love wisdom and can exercise compassion, and so on. And they form part of a group. Lovely thing. A beautiful thing. Not just a flower sticking up out of the ground with a head on it, but an inflorescence of individual. You want to see what I mean? Just take a delphinium, turn it upside down, and you've got exactly the process. Remembering that we see things upside down in this world, and that by turning it upside down, we are seeing real. I'm going to have a 10-minute break, and then we will come back to take up the subject of sensitivity. Thank you. There are always problems which beset the neophyte, the chela on the path, the secret path. They become demoralized easily. If any of you are going to be associated with groups, and you should, I can tell you something now that might disconcert some of you. And it is that there will be no spiritual evolution of individuals on the basis of isolated effort, such as occurred in the Piscean Age. Aquarius is the sign of groups, and in the Aquarian Age, spiritual unfoldment will become group effort and will be rewarded as group effort in what we call group initiation. And that's worth remembering. I know, of course I would know in this particular field, many individuals who say, I like to work alone. And that's that. I like to work alone. Well, it isn't possible to do that in the Aquarian Age. Could have done it in Pisces, indeed most of us did for at least one or two lives. Lived alone, worked alone in our monastic environment, and no doubt loved it, but not from now on. And it's worth remembering. The other problem is that people on the path lose sight of the goal. I get confused, they say. Yes, the teaching of the ages, the wisdom of the ages, is all very well and it's lovely, but it can be a bit overwhelming. And they're the ones that you should give the answer that I gave a few minutes ago, that the path is the goal. The path is the goal. Being on it, stopping, pausing, and helping others along it, that is the goal. Not the great supernal light at the somewhere at the end of the long tunnel. It's here and now on the path. Many words for this secret path. Some call it the razor's edge. Razor's edge because there are such narrow limits, interspaces between consciousness and unconsciousness, between virtue and vice, between so many things. The razor's edge. And you can miss the fruits of a whole meditation by not bringing the breathing in at the critical moment on the razor's edge. The razor-edged path, the middle way, because it asks that you exercise understanding of what is required in terms of moderation. Don't go crackers every time you pick up a a book and read one or two paragraphs, and the next thing you're all for Gurdjieff, and then a moment later it's Steiner and so on. Choose a middle path. Try not hurt anybody. Try and grow. I've said this many times. If you're not doubling your consciousness every year, there's something wrong. There's something disorganized in the way you are treading the path. Now, that doesn't mean to say you have to become an intellectual giant overnight, or even intellectual at all, though it helps. It means that you must try and develop a rounded out, integrated personality, which is in truth the one side of the sword sharpened. The other side of the sword comes later, when Abraham takes the most precious thing he has, which is his son Isaac, takes him up to the mountaintop, because the angel has told him he must use his most beloved thing, his son, as a sacrificial lamb on an altar way up in the mountains, the mountains of initiation. So this is an initiation situation for Abraham. And so he takes his integrated personality, Isaac, his most beloved thing, the personality, and places it before the Lord and raises his knife to sacrifice. The angel pulls at the arm and stops him. But the fact is that he was prepared to. And that, in terms of ordinary discipleship, means that you take your the greatest achievement of this incarnation, which is your integrated personality, your rounded out nature, and give it to the higher self. Not my will be done, but thy will be done from now on. Doesn't matter how much I resent the job that's being given to me by you, the inner self. I will do it because it is your will, and I will do it to the best of my ability. And that's an important matter, very important indeed. The rounded out, integrated personality is the one edge of the sword, and the second edge of the short sword is when that personality is in service of its higher being, of the Lord, in the service of the Lord. Then the second blade comes into operation. We are, in fact, by treading the secret path, intervening in our destiny. Our destiny is assured, whatever it is, it's assured. But we can intervene in that destiny. You can do what you damn well like on this planet. Probably won't make any difference. But you are answerable to the lords of karma or the lords of destiny, whatever you like, but you are answerable. And that should give anyone pause to think. I always say the most desperate, sinful thing is to know the next step and not to take it. That's incorporated in the biblical saying. I've got a lot of biblical stuff today. I'm sorry, it just happens to be the fall of the stars today. I think we've got three squares on this day in the planetary chart. Yes. intervening in our destiny. It affects the kind of life you're going to live next time. It affects the role that you will play in that life. It affects what kind of advantages and disadvantages will be given to you to pursue that life. And so it is a powerful matter. Now, there are many byways to knowing the self. I think it was Socrates who pointed out that one light enabled a whole group of his to read their books in that light. And he pointed out that one light provided an opportunity for many to read their books and go their own ways, thinking intellectually. And there is one light within by which all of us can find our pathway to the center of our being. We have always to remember the vehicle of the mind, which is the brain. The brain. That which has absolutely been an enigma to science. Forebrain, hindbrain, medulla. And this immense structure in terms of its electrical components, this immense structure is hardly used. Hardly used. If I don't use a limb, the muscles in that limb will waste. And only when I start to use the limb will they grow again. And if I use a completely different movement, a muscle will grow that operates that movement, or a series, a combination of muscles. And this is true of the body. But it's not true of the brain. There are parts of the brain whose function we know, the will, the type of character we have, the optical area of the brain where we see, the places where we sense and we activate from, different parts of the brain, but 9/10 of it has no known function. And the strange thing is that that 90% of the brain doesn't waste away. It remains silent, waiting, as it were. How else would you interpret it? If there is a magnificent organ there, not functioning in any way that we know, and appearing to be there and not going to waste, what must you assume? Nature has provided all that difficult material and put it together for nothing. So we say that if you were to take all the resources of the world, and this must come home to us who watched a whole war enacted in terms of electronics in front of us a few months ago, we could take the whole resources of the world and never produce a computer equal to the human brain. And there are these immense areas of the brain waiting to be used. And by what? By the mind. So the potential of the mind in terms of physical matter, never mind anything else, astrally, mentally, personality-wise, higher mind, and so on. Never mind them. Just in terms of physical tissues, the potential of the brain, the potential of the mind acting through the brain is immense. And the teaching is that all parts of man's body, including the appendix, will be used again, will eventually be used or eventually used again. The difficulty with the brain is that, according to science, there is a programmer of the brain, but we don't know about him at all, anything about him. Something programs this computer. Otherwise, we must assume that somehow or the other, a computer has evolved by Darwinian forces without a programmer. So when you probe these attitudes of science and the material world, you can't separate the two. Then you find extraordinary anomalies. The brain is waiting. Waiting for what? Development. Development of what? Consciousness. The development of consciousness. If you had walked this planet 200 years ago, could you, in your wildest dreams, have imagined the things that are existing on the planet today? No, you couldn't. But they are a fraction of man's capacity as a mental being. Fraction. And the rest, the best is yet to come. And so we say that possessing this, it is worthwhile to find out something about the programmer, the man who programs the computer. Marvelous. I can do things, and you can do things during the day. You can't even remember doing them. But it makes sense now because the programmer, there's a program there and the thing is operating and you don't have to have consciousness directing it. Many things that lie in the subconscious. Now, the trouble with this world, this material world, is that they don't acknowledge the immortal part of ourselves, the programmer. That there is a grand architect, that there is a scheme for the universe which is in motion and is moving in the direction of completing that stream, teleology we call it. The path that I have described is a continual path, a process of learning who we are and why we are here. And I've given you the reasons for it. Surely we would need to identify ourselves with a person, an entity, who is the programmer if the computer is operating us. I want to tell you another of my little stories. Well, you'll have to take it as it comes. There was a forest, and there were fields next to the forest, and in the fields, sheep grazed. And this had gone on since time immemorial. But a lioness who was pregnant and badly mauled came out of the forest and found a safe place to have her cub. Whether she knew that the sheep being there might provide food or shelter, what, beside the point. She had her cub, and shortly afterwards she died. So the cub was all alone, and it was a tiny little inoffensive thing. And the sheep moved as usual across the field. And somehow or the other, with all that grazing and carrying on, the lion cub became part of the sheep, the drove of sheep, and grew up with them slowly. And the sheep were not nonplussed by it. They accepted the cub. The cub accepted the sheep, and everything was fine. But then one day, when the sheep were near the forest, there was a loud roar from the forest. A lion roared. And the little cub picked his ears up and listened for it. And the sheep noted this and said, "Oh, don't worry about that. You're never going to be any good going back into the forest, joining your friends and so on. You stay with us. We've got a nice, sure existence. We don't know what happens at the end of it, but it's a nice, sure existence." And so the lion cub stayed there and became part of the sheep. And that in itself represents the story, generally, of humanity. The lion roars, and generally there's no answer to the roar. Mankind is impervious to a call from its own. But then the story goes on to say that one day the lion cub heard the roar again. And this time, he decided he was going to investigate. There was something about that roar that rang a bell in him. So he trotted off into the forest. And he grew up as a lion and acted like a lion. And that is one of the most damning things of our material world. Is not only do they create the material world of which we are a part, but we have to subscribe to it. And if you don't subscribe to material possession and growth and so on, then you are ridiculed or looked down. And any ideas that don't fit in to self-aggrandizement, competition, and so on, is looked down on. The story of the lion cub. Now, we double our awareness each year, as I said. And you may think that it's not much to double your awareness in one year. Two times one is two. Two times two is four for the next year. Two times four is eight. And then 16 and 5 years. 16 times as much awareness. Quite a lot. That's if you're just beginning to tread the path. When you are initiate, the thing becomes geometrical, on a geometrical scale. 2 times 2 is 4. 4 times 4 is 16. 16 times 16. And so on. Now, I can't convince you of a thing like that because I may be the lion and you may be the sheep. But it's a fact. I have no reason to say this to you unless it were true. But you must judge for yourself. Certainly, you can tread these paths, but there are paths that go like that, and they go round the mountain, climb very slowly to the top, and there are other paths that go straight up the mountain face. And it depends greatly on how important the lion's roar is to you. If it rang every bell in your body and you knew that you were in the wrong place with the wrong people at the wrong time, then you must know you are wanted. You are wanted by those lovely beings in that lovely home that we all came from. part of the increase of awareness. You'll say, well, he's saying that, back to my university days, he's saying that I'll double my awareness in 3 years, be 16 times, and 16 times means I could get 3 degrees if I started to tread the path and instead of getting 1 degree. Nah, we're not talking about that. We're talking about things like sensitivity. The aura sensitivity is an advancement in consciousness. The sensitivity of the aura. And when we advance in the way that I've described, the sensory areas begin to overlap. The sensory areas begin to overlap. Sight. That was there, pushes outwards. Hearing, the senses begin to overlap and the aura is transformed. Not so much to provide us with Siddhis, powers, but that it becomes a receptacle for the influx of spiritual energies coming from the inner reality. The aura becomes a receiving plate, as it were. And it's this sensitivity that is the greatest barrier, trap, for the unwary disciple. The disciple has to cope somehow. Little boys go to the dentist and some of them are more sensitive to pain than others and have to have an injection for the pain. People are different. And imagine with a growth of awareness what kind of sensitivity you're developing with it. And that's the thing to remember.